If you try to open up a resort in this country and you say, okay, come to our resort, the door is closed for a week, we're going to offer unlimited drinks, there is no police force, and the workers are from a third world country, they wouldn't let them go in business. And yet that's exactly the environment of a cruise ship. The cruise lines take the legal position. They do not have an obligation to investigate crimes. The FBI, when they are notified, really don't want to take these cases on and generally don't take these cases on. It's an issue of worldwide crime that has never been addressed properly. Even today, Tim, people are going missing and they say there is no video. I find that hard to believe. The girl was 15 years old. In 1 hour, they gave her 10 drinks. She went to the railing, threw up, and fell overboard, and that was it.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Banal of America Audio, with your host, Tim Banal.
What is going on, my friends? This is Tim Banal of banalofamerica.com with another edition of BOA Audio Season 7. On this edition of the program, we are venturing into some uncharted waters as we welcome Kendall Carver, founder of the International Cruise Victims Organization, for a discussion on the troubling trend of disappearances and felonious crimes that are committed aboard cruise ships, as well as how they are subsequently covered up by the cruise ship industry. Over the course of the conversation, Kendall is going to revisit in tremendous and heartbreaking detail how the disappearance of his daughter aboard a cruise ship in 2004 led him on a lengthy search for answers, which was continuously thwarted by the cruise ship industry. Additionally, we'll discuss a number of similar cases where people have gone missing or have been murdered aboard cruise ships, and we'll learn about how the cruise ship industry uses legal loopholes, its influence in Washington, as well as the isolated nature of these cruise ship journeys to avoid taking responsibility for the fate of its passengers. This is a deeply disconcerting edition of the program, which will likely leave you flummoxed and outraged at the under-discussed crime wave on the high seas that has been uncovered by Kendall Carver's International Cruise Victims Organization. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Kendall Carver, please allow me to provide you with a little background on him. Upon graduation from the University of Iowa, Kendall Carver started in the insurance business with Washington National Insurance Company in Evanston, Illinois. In 1977, he was promoted to president and CEO of Washington National Life Insurance Company of New York and held that position until his retirement in 1995. In 2001, he founded and currently serves as chairman of the Executive Men's Group. This group is made up of 25 active and retired senior executives located in the Phoenix metropolitan area. Following the disappearance of his daughter, Marion Carver, aboard a cruise ship in August 2004, Kendall began a lengthy quest for answers, using legal means and private investigators. On January 1, 2006, he founded a group for victims of cruise line crimes. He currently serves as chairman of this group, International Cruise Victims Association Incorporated, which now has members in 24 countries around the world and has recently passed major legislation in Washington to control crimes on cruise ships. His website is www.internationalcruisevictims.org. Pretty simple, all one word, internationalcruisevictims.org. And with all that said, let's get down to business, my friends, and rock and roll. This interview was recorded on August 22nd, 2012. Kendall Carver, talking about the International Cruise Victims Organization on BOA Audio, Season 7. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of BOA Audio Season 7, and I think you are going to be remembering this episode for quite some time. It is chilling, it's frightening, and it's really beyond the pale of what we usually talk about here on the show. This isn't paranormal, this is stuff that could happen to anybody and stuff that really could affect people when they least expect it, when their guards are particularly down. And I'm talking about crimes on the high seas, crimes on these cruise ships. And our guest is Kendall Carver, and he has a really sad and tragic story about how his involvement in advocating for cruise victims began. He is the chairman of the International Cruise Victims Organization, and he has testified before Congress four times regarding what really is a tremendously serious issue, that is these crimes on cruise ships that many, many people don't even know about, or they just hear about it in snippets. I mean, it's getting into the media now more and more, but it really hasn't burst onto the public consciousness just yet, and I think it's going to in a very short amount of time. And that is really a lot having to do with the work of Kendall Carver and his work advocating for these international cruise ship victims. So welcome to the program, Kendall. I'm really looking forward to this conversation, and really I think people are going to be captivated by what they hear.
Well, Tim, it's my pleasure to take time today to discuss this subject.
Now, we usually start out with the bio, the background, and of course you really have just as I said, a tragic and horrifying story that you know, began your involvement in all this. So let's just start there and sort of bring people up to speed and give them the background on you know, the story of Marion Carver and you know, Kendall Carver's involvement in all this.
Okay, well, I'm the father of four daughters. Marion was the oldest daughter, lived in Cambridge, and in August of 2007, her daughter called. Marion was divorced, so she had joint custody with her daughter and her former husband, and Marion and her daughter talked, I don't know, daily or very frequently. And her daughter called one day to say that Marion wasn't returning her phone calls. And at that point, I guess I wasn't concerned. I said, well, let me check it out. And so we started calling Marion and weren't getting return phone calls. It's like the last week of August of 2007. And after, three or four days, we went to the Cambridge police and started the process of filing a missing person report on Marion.
Yeah.
And once we did that, then the Cambridge police got involved, and one of the first things they did is that they went to her apartment and went in, checked it out. Everything was fine, except Marion wasn't there. There was no notes or any indication where she was, but she wasn't in her apartment. So they started an investigation, and after a couple of weeks, they were able to gain access to credit card transactions. And these credit card transactions, one of them showed the purchase of a cruise from Seattle to Vancouver. Now, Marion was 40 years old, fairly sophisticated, very attractive. She'd taken many cruises by herself and with her daughter, and she was old enough. She didn't tell us everything she was doing and when she was doing it, but that wasn't a particular surprise. So based upon the Cambridge police determining that, I called Celebrity Cruise Lines, which is really part of Royal Caribbean, like the third week in September, and I said, gee, was our daughter on your cruise ship? And they got back in a couple of days and said, well, she was, but after a couple of days didn't use her room, and that's not uncommon. And they didn't know whether or not she'd gotten off the ship. And so the next question we immediately asked them, well, is there any video or anything concerning Marion? And they said, well, we're into this 3 weeks. We have already erased the video. There's been no review concerning Marion. So that left us, I guess you would say, hanging of what was going on with Marion. There had been no reports filed with the FBI or anything. So we decided, we made a decision to move forward. And the first decision was we wanted to speak to somebody on that ship that had seen Marion.
Yeah.
Now, that seemed like a pretty, you know, easy request. And that was the steward. So we hired a firm called Kroll and Associates, which is an international detective agency, to get involved at that point. We went to a law firm in Boston to gain the legal power to act on behalf of Marion and started an investigation. So Kroll and Associates contacted the cruise line and asked if any reports had been made by the steward or anyone, and they said no, been no reports made concerning Marion. And then after 5 weeks, the cruise line finally made a report to the FBI and really said nothing in that report. So they weren't aware of it for 5 weeks. And once they were aware of it, they did nothing. We would have hoped that they'd gone on that ship.
Yeah.
And interviewed the steward or made some inquiries. But as best we could determine, they did nothing. So that is why we had to hire our own detective agency.
Yeah, no one's taken the initiative to do anything about this except you guys.
No, and that turns out to be not an uncommon practice, that in effect the FBI, when they are notified, really don't want to take these cases on and generally don't take these cases on. So anyway, we started a process, and Kroll and Associates did their best to set up an appointment to talk to the steward, and they were unsuccessful in getting an interview with the steward. So then, 1st of November, they sent detectives on the ship that Marion was on. And they were greeted by someone from Risk Management in Miami, plus their chief outside legal counsel. And weren't allowed to talk to anybody on the ship. They were told that there was no video review concerning Marion. They'd already disposed of it and really came away from the ship with no information. In fact, they'd been stonewalled by the very people that we thought were there to help us. And when you start off, we assumed that Risk Management was there to help us. Well, Risk Management, I've got to tell your listeners, is not there to assist you. They are there to protect the cruise lines.
Right. They're managing the cruise line's risks.
Right. They're not there, but you start off on the assumption they're there to help you. So we're now in November. We weren't able to get any information from the stewards since they wouldn't provide him. They wouldn't let him talk to the detectives. So we took legal action in the courts in Massachusetts to depose the steward because he was, we wanted to talk to him and get information from him.
Right.
And finally in January 16th, I think it is, of 2005, we finally were able to depose the steward. Now, when we took the court action in Massachusetts, then we had to take that court action and go to the courts in Florida. Because if somebody reads their cruise line ticket, you have to take legal action in Florida, not in Massachusetts or Iowa or wherever you're from.
Right.
So that made it necessary for us to hire another law firm.
Good.
So now we're up to two law firms. Just to speak to the steward and taking court action both in Massachusetts and then in Florida. Well, in the deposition of the steward, he indicated that he had reported Marion missing daily to his supervisor, and his supervisor indicated, just forget it and do your job. At the end of the cruise, the steward said to his supervisor, he said, well, what do I do with the stuff in the room? They said, just put it in a bag and put it in my locker, in the supervisor's locker. And we later found out they just gave it away. It all disappeared. They took one item, a large purse that Marion used to carry some of her clothes, put it in storage with her name, Social Security number, and got rid of everything else. So now all of a sudden we realize in January, from the very beginning, that they've been lying to us. That, in fact, she had been reported missing. And, in fact, they'd taken every step to inhibit any investigation of what happened to Marion. Well, we were stunned.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That had to be the worst day of my life. When I realized after 5 months, and you might be interested in knowing, Tim, that to get to that deposition cost $75,000.
I'm hearing this story, Kendall. I'm getting outraged. I can only imagine how you felt and feel. I mean, the more I'm hearing this, I'm just getting more and more angry at how this all unfolded. It's just unbelievable.
Well, it was incredible. And most people don't spend $75,000.
Most people don't have $75,000.
Yeah, just to get the one person on that ship to find out that everything we'd been told had been a lie at that point. And I'm going to jump ahead a little bit. In that deposition, we also asked him about the video. And their lawyer interrupted the hotel manager and said that we count that as privileged information for national security reasons. In effect, he said, I'll let the hotel manager, who on the second day we deposed, answer the question. And the answer was he didn't know anything about the video. But their lawyer had interrupted his answer, saying we count that as privileged information for national security reasons.
That's just weird. Can they even invoke national security? I mean,
well, they did.
Yeah, I guess.
You know, okay. And I'm just going to jump ahead a little bit.
Okay.
A year later, the head of Celebrity Cruise Lines contacted us because the case was starting to get a lot of press and invited us to meet with him. He said he'll come to Phoenix or we can come to Florida or whatever. So we met with Dan Handrahan, the CEO of Celebrity Cruise Lines. We asked him about the video. His answer was the tape was broke. So now we have it was erased. Number two, it was national security. Number three, the tape was broke. Well, guess what? In 2008, they finally admitted that they had a video, that they'd kept it for several months and reviewed it. We'd subpoenaed that information from them. So, I mean, here's the one thing. I mean, if they had a video and it showed Marion jumping off the ship, hey, that's the end of the story.
Right.
I mean, right up front. But in fact, they continuously lied to us about video. And even today, Tim, people are going missing and they say there is no video. I find that hard to believe. I find it hard to believe that anybody could go off a cruise ship without a video. They only pull it out when it's to their advantage.
Yeah.
But they're still saying that to people. Oh, there's no video. Person just disappeared off a cruise ship. Oh, sorry we looked, but there's no video. So anyway, it's jumping ahead a little bit at that point. But anyway, after 9 months, we got certain material from Royal Caribbean. We subpoenaed just tons of material, but we got 3 emails, which if you go to my Senate testimony, you can see, in effect, in the third week of September, showed them communicating internally, setting up the cover-up of our disappearance. It showed that they had talked to 15 crew members who worked with that steward to make sure that nobody had gotten to that steward. They had a separate email that the hotel manager is giving to risk management saying, I've talked to this guy 3 times and told him, this is very important, do not say anything. And then there's another memo how they disposed of our goods. So in other words, right up front, they knew exactly what had happened.
Yeah.
Well, so when all of this is going on and we realize we were clearly dealing with a cover-up, a book came out in June of 2005 called The Devil in the Deep Blue Sea.
Mm-hmm.
And it was written up in a full-page ad in Business Week, so I went down to the bookstore and brought it home. And when I got to the part on victims, it said the standard operating procedure was cover-up of crimes. That's just the way they operated. They get the person involved in the crime. In this case, they felt it was the supervisor. They get them off the ship so nobody can interview them, and that's their standard operating procedure. Well, when I read that, I realized what I was reading was exactly what had happened to us.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden you realize, gee, we're not alone. We're just part of a bigger picture.
Absolutely. A much vaster and troubling picture. And that, of course, I presume, obviously, led to the creation of the International Cruise Victims Organization to try and raise awareness about
that. Yeah. At that point, we hadn't got that far yet.
Okay.
But we made a decision in July of 2005 to go public. Now, here's somebody who had disappeared a year before, and it's an old story. But we kind of intellectually decided maybe we'd take the story public. So starting September, October, we started exploring that. And I think through the work of God, we knew one person at CNN. And I called him, and he was doing something called Katrina with Anderson Cooper in September of 2005. So he really kind of put me off. But all of a sudden, 2 months later, he called and said, Ken, I'm going to fly to Phoenix, and we're going to do the story of Marion. So we ended up, Tim, being on the first Anderson Cooper show.
Wow.
Which was a major, I mean, to go from nothing to the first Anderson Cooper show. The same week, the Arizona Republic became aware of the story, ran a front page story on Marion. And then CNN, the producer did something else, which turned out to be extremely significant, is that there was this case of the honeymoon couple in Connecticut, George Smith, gone missing, was getting a lot of press. So Chris Shea, the representative from Connecticut, was starting to get involved with that, and so they suggested I call Chris Shea. And in fact, that put us into the first congressional hearing in December of 2005, that discussed two cases, our daughter's case and the George Smith case. And it was, CNN leading us to Chris Shea and Chris Shea holding a congressional hearing. So that was the first congressional hearing I attended. Now, no victims spoke at that meeting. Just the congressional people, they had the Coast Guard, the FBI, the cruise lines, and et cetera. But after that meeting, Tim, I came to the conclusion that there was a major problem with this industry on crime. So, and I also concluded I couldn't solve it personally. So we contacted some other families that we were aware of, the Smith family in Connecticut, Gene Scavone, who lost a son and lived in Connecticut, a fellow named Son Michael Fain, who both of his parents disappeared off a cruise ship. And on January 1st of 2006, we formed a little group with four people, four families called International Cruise Victims Association. And from that start, Tim, 6.5 years later, we now have members and friends in 24 countries around the world.
Wow.
And it's indicative of how this message has gone, as it's become known. This morning, I listened, had a link to a news story out of Australia. A woman's just written a book on it. But it has just gone all over the world.
Right, right. It's a tremendously riveting phenomenon, I guess you could say. I don't even know really what the words for it. It's just so bizarre, and the more you hear about it, as I dug into the International Cruise Victims website, it was just, you're bombarded with these stories, and just how, as I said, I get so angry hearing what happened to your daughter, and you keep reading them, and you get more and more outraged at these stories. Catch people up to speed, because I've personally never really been on one of these cruise lines. I guess give people sort of an idea of, you know, how, because they say these are like cities on the sea and there's thousands of people. Give me an idea of generally, you know, what the basics of all this is. How many people are on these ships? And how, and I think it's critical to point out that the crew is usually like half the number of people. You know, you add an additional amount for quite a huge crew. So I guess, you know, just sort of give us the baseline information on this cruise industry.
Yeah, well, the typical cruise ship, and I want to use your analogy, that it's like a city.
Mm-hmm.
It is like a city. I mean, they've got the cooks, they've got the people that do the laundry, they got all the ingredients you would need to run a city. The captain is like the mayor of the city. He's the guy in charge. But you know, Tim, they're missing one item. That is an independent police force.
Yeah.
The cruise lines take the legal position, and it's in my Senate testimony, they do not have an obligation to investigate crimes. So you've got a city with unlimited drinking and no police force. So that gives you a setting of what, and it's a group of strangers. Now, what is the typical cruise ship? Well, I would say a few years ago, the average ship might have been 2,000 passengers, might hold 2,000 passengers, plus 1,000 crew members. Now, where are the crew members from? They're from the Philippines, Indonesia, India. They pay them minimal wages. I'm saying minimal wages because they flagged the ship in countries, third world countries, where the work rules allow them to pay almost, you couldn't possibly operate a company at the money that they pay these crew members. So you've got, you know, 2,000 passengers, 1,000 crew members, and this goes back a few years ago. But now they're building ships that hold 5,500 passengers.
Wow.
And another 2,500 crew members. And these crew members, they come from a different background, different mores. They're on those ships for 9 months. They're paid minimal wages. They work them 7 days a week. And their mores are different.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. All the ingredients. You can see why this is such a problem, because all the ingredients are there for bad things to happen. I mean, you've got, you know, a massive amount of people. You've got no police force, no jurisdictional, you know, control over all this. And then people from all over the world who live a transient lifestyle, in a sense, or some sort of bizarre lifestyle where you live on the ocean for months or years at a time. I mean, that just changes the mindset of people. So it's troubling.
Yeah, and to assume that all those crew members, and even the passengers, that they're all nice people is an assumption that if you think that, you're thinking wrong. Because statistically, you're going to have people in there that will create problems. And that's exactly what has happened. And there's nobody policing it. And the crew members know that if they commit a crime, they're not going to go to jail. They just take them off the ship at the next port. And then they go to work for another cruise line, which is incredible.
It's unbelievable. It's just absolutely unbelievable. That's why I really wanted to get you on this program, because the more I heard about it and the more I read about it, it was like, this is, you know, I need to dig more into this. This is insane. I noticed, too, that we'll get into some of the other specific cases that you've got on the website, but it seems, you know, you mentioned the jurisdictional issues. That seems to be a big problem, and as what, you know, you said what happened with your daughter, it's like these crimes are covered up, and the length of time to report someone missing. I mean, if they had it their way, if you hadn't asked about where, if your daughter was on that ship, they never even would have gotten in touch with you.
No, they wouldn't have. If we had not spent the Cambridge police able to trace her to that cruise ship, she would have just vanished in the world.
Yeah.
Which is rather incredible.
Exactly. I mean, people could go on these ships and they, you know, they come home and no one ever finds out, you know. I'm sure that's happening.
Yeah,
and I can only imagine, you know, we talk about the people that you've heard from. There's probably countless stories out there where no one did the legwork, or no one really followed up, or there weren't, you know, witnesses on the, you know, with the people, and, you know, their stories are just lost.
Oh, absolutely. And that really became the second phase of international cruise victims, and we can talk about some of the victims now or later. But after that first hearing, Tim, Chris Shea decided to hold another hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the beginning of starting to put in place some controls over the cruise lines for crimes on cruise ships. Now, That was in March of 2005, and I was asked to testify. And five other victims testified at that congressional hearing. And each one had their own tragic story. But we did something, Tim, that was the smartest thing we ever did.
Mm-hmm.
If we had just sat there and told our stories of what had happened to us, that would have been it. But we came together as a group, and we had only been formed a couple of months at that point, and came up with a 10-point simple program to improve safety on cruise ships.
Yeah.
Like background checks, reviewing the video, really basic stuff.
Exactly, yeah.
And we presented that. And frankly, that caught the Congressional Committee off guard because all of a sudden, here's a positive thing to do. And it caught the cruise lines off guard. And I never will forget at that meeting, I went up to Michael Cry, who represented the cruise lines at that point, and I said, hey, Michael. And frankly, this is the first time I'd ever been in a hearing. I said, you got to work with us. And the cruise lines like to publicize that they have a zero tolerance for crime. In 1999, the four CEOs of the major companies, and I think they're still the CEOs, signed a letter, we have a zero tolerance for crime. So the cruise line industry loves to repeat that. We have a zero tolerance for crime. That's our policy. Well, if you have a zero tolerance for crime, that says to me there's nothing you wouldn't do to prevent a crime.
Right.
If somebody comes up with 10 suggestions, you say, hey, these are great. We'll do them. Well, after that hearing, nothing happened.
What was his reaction when you said that to him?
I think he kind of looked at me and said, who is this guy? You know, honestly.
Yeah. No, I know. Yeah, well, he's making millions and millions of dollars probably, and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's a long story with Michael Cry. I could go on and on by that. But a year later, we had another congressional hearing. And there the power shifted from the Republicans to the Democrats. So Elijah Cummings was the chairman of the committee. Chris Shea was, because he's Republican, had lost the power that he had. But Doris Matsui in California, one of her constituents, Lori Dishman, had been raped. So this Doris Matsui got involved in it. So she really pushed in the House to have another hearing. So anyway, we then had our second hearing in the House of Representatives. And the thing that came out of that is that the cruise lines were ordered to meet with us, Tim, to go over the 10-point program. In other words, what could we all voluntarily agree to? And so they were ordered to meet with us. Well, frankly, that is the last thing they wanted to do.
Yeah.
Was to meet with this group of victims that has no money, no paid staff, and that's still the case today. But what we do have, Tim, is two things: passion of victims and tremendous intellectual expertise in a whole wide-ranging different levels of area.
Mm-hmm.
So that we have extremely, I guess you would say, experts in all of these areas.
Yeah.
So anyway, that summer, Tim, they finally agreed they had to meet with us because Elijah Cummings said, we're going to have another hearing in 6 months. I want to know what you can work things out.
Yeah, exactly.
Because everybody looked at the 10 points, pretty simple things.
Well, they don't want to spend the money, and they don't want to, you know, they don't want the responsibility of what they would uncover, I'm sure, by taking.
No, they said they have a zero tolerance. That was a public relations statement, not a true statement. So anyway, finally, they agreed to meet like in July of 2006 because they had to. So we had, I don't know, three lawyers there, a college professor, and three members of the executive committee. We met in Washington, and we're all paying our own expenses to go there.
Mm-hmm.
And they had head of security, Royal Caribbean, Carnival, and the head of the trade association, CLIA. And so we spent 4 hours going through these various items, well documented, and they ended up saying, well, these are great ideas. We'll study them. We'll review them, but they wouldn't commit to anything.
of course, yeah.
But they did something else when they agreed to meet with us, which was most amazing, is that on the day they sent the letter to us agreeing to the meeting that they really didn't have, they sent out another letter, and it's in my testimony, and it's addressed to all passengers and their families. Oh, my goodness, all passengers and their families could be millions of people.
Yeah.
That's the world.
Right.
So we're going to have this meeting in Miami. We want you to come, bring your family. We're going to talk about all the great things we're doing for security. Well, then over the next few months, I started getting tremendous pressure to invite our members to that free meeting that they were hosting in Miami.
Yeah.
So I asked them two questions. I said, well, who did you invite to the meeting? And what's the program? Now, it seemed like two reasonable questions
right.
to ask, and never could get an answer. Well, about 2 weeks before the meeting, I was threatened with a lawsuit by a certain party if we didn't invite our members. In other words, I was threatened with a lawsuit if I didn't invite our members to their meeting.
That's weird.
Well, I went to a lawyer. He said, Ken, that's not your meeting. That's their meeting.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I was really playing hardball, and fortunately, I don't know if you saw, I've been around for a while. I was CEO of a company in New York City for 18 years, insurance companies, and I'm not intimidated. But I finally decided the week before the meeting, hey, maybe I better go to see what's going on. What are they doing? So myself and another member of the board, Sun Michael Fain, we went to the meeting. Guess what? The only people they wanted there were our members.
Right.
It wasn't to the world, and it was designed to try to pull them away and split them off from ICV. Incredible move on their part. So anyway, I can stop at this point, but we then went back in September and had to report in another congressional hearing that nothing had been accomplished. And at the end of the hearing, Elijah Cummings finally said, hey, we've had now four hearings.
Yeah.
And nobody's agreed to anything. So he said to the cruise lines, you got 90 days. Tell me what you're willing to do. What are you willing to do?
Right.
For safety. Well, 90 days later, Tim, they came up with a nice 32-page glossy report with a nice cover and everything. Guess what? They didn't agree to anything and would not agree to anything. I mean, what an opportunity they had to do some of this stuff.
Yes, this is maddening that they're dragging their feet. I mean, you said you'd stop, but I want to hear how this thing unfolds. So, I mean, I can't believe that it's just, like I said, it's just maddening.
Well, they did something else in the report. On the first page of the report, they indicated that the FBI had testified in September that the crime rate on cruise ships was 0.01%, like nothing. On the top of the next page, in bold letters, they said the FBI testified the crime rate's 0.01%. And then they go to the fourth page, and they repeat it. Well, I've been at that hearing. The FBI never said that.
Right.
So finally, after the first year, I wrote the FBI. I said, hey, here's what the cruise lines are saying that you testified to in Congress. Well, the FBI wrote me a letter and said, we never said that. that was not true. In other words, but unless somebody calls them on these points, Tim.
Right.
You accept it. But one thing ICV members don't do is that we question everything.
Right, right. Well, you can't trust these companies now. It's obviously you can't.
Well, they agreed to nothing and in effect lied what the FBI's testimony had been. I don't know what more you could do wrong. You know, in trying to protect your position, instead of doing the right thing, they did everything they could to avoid the rules. So when we got to the Senate hearing then, in June of 2007, I used that, how they had misrepresented the facts to a congressional committee. And at that meeting, they had a Dr. Fox, who I believe lives in Boston, who they paid to come there to justify their low crime rates. And he was not on the dais. He was not testifying. But when I got done going through just what I've said, he interrupted the hearing and said to Senator Kerry, I want to say something. So Kerry finally said, okay, you got 15 or 30 seconds. And his comment was, I don't know how the cruise lines could have said that. It's clearly not true. And how they could have used that in their report. So here's their expert witness, come to defend them, to saying exactly what they presented was not true. So anyway, that kind of gives you a history of the congressional sessions. But, I mean, when we go up to a congressional session with the cruise lines, they got their lawyers, got the experts, they got their chief lobbyists, and we're just a group of victims. The only thing we have going for us is truth.
Absolutely, yeah. Just riveting and unbelievable stuff. Let's get into some of these cases that are discussed on the website. I tried to just take some of the ones that stood out, particularly to me. But really, I think, and people should realize here at this point, we're not just talking about disappearances. We're talking about murders. We're talking about rapes. We're talking about attempted child abductions. We're talking about offshore robberies that are very suspicious and, you know, make you wonder if they were facilitated by nefarious crew members. So we're not just talking about people going missing. We're talking about a real myriad of unsavory crimes.
And, absolutely.
And the one that and one of the stories I think that people may have heard about, especially our international listeners, is this Rebecca Corium story, because it's gotten a lot of press, not just in the UK, but throughout the world. So I guess talk a little bit about that one, because I'm sure you're well versed in that. And that's
well, the Corian family, their daughter, who was I think 21 or 22, worked on a Disney cruise ship, and literally vanished off the cruise ship. As my daughter vanished off the cruise ship, mm-hmm. and as I said earlier in our conversation, no video. Well, that should be impossible.
Right.
That there's no video. So anyway, we started working with the Corian family a year ago, and we recommend any victim join with ICV. But a lot of victims, if a crime has occurred, they've lost somebody or a sexual crime, they don't want to go public with it. They want to kind of hide in the closet from them. But the Corian family was different, I guess, as I'm different and a lot of our members are different, in that they said, hey, this is not right. We want to know what happened to our daughter, and we want to help change the system.
Right.
And so they, and this became, in England, in the UK, and Europe, a major story that's been played over and over and over. Mm-hmm. This morning, an Australian television show, the case was mentioned.
Right.
So it's a case, and there are other cases like this, but a lot of times the families, you know, to go on television or to talk to you and talk about my case, or they talk about their daughter's case, that's not easy.
Exactly, yeah.
To talk about these things, but the Corian family has gone public, and they're being supported by their family. And they're also being supported, a year ago, Victim Support of Europe agreed to work with ICV. So in England, there's Victim Support of the UK, which is probably the largest victims organization in the world. And because of our earlier contact with Victim Support of Europe, which is the umbrella organization of all the victims groups in 28 countries, they took on the Corian case, and they have been extremely helpful because they're professional, they're well-known, and so they have been working with the Corian family. We've been working with the Corian family, and we hope that as a result of that, that there'll be a movement in Europe that laws be put in place to protect the passengers of these countries.
Yeah.
If somebody leaves the UK on a cruise ship, they're no longer under the laws of the UK. They're under the laws of the Bahamas or Bermuda or wherever the ship has been flagged. And that's what the Corian found out, is that one lone policeman in either Bermuda or the Bahamas, I forget which one, was put in charge, made a one-day trip to L.A., greeted the boat, didn't interview anybody, came back, and that was the investigation.
Yeah.
And that's exactly why the cruise lines have put their ships under those jurisdictions. And so the goal is that the police force of the country where that person is, the UK or the United States, they lead the investigation and not some third world country that's going to do nothing, has no capability of doing anything. And that's the box that the Corgan family has gone into. So that story has been picked up, I mean, every newspaper and the BBC and...
Yeah, it's everywhere.
Everywhere in England and the United States, this morning in Australia. As Marion's case, the George Smith case, became public knowledge, I don't want to say it's helpful, but to have a case like the Corgan family in Europe has been essential.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and, it's really raised awareness.
Well, and it's done some other things.
Well, it's opened up Europe, too, as a place where this can be discussed and you know, you may not run into a lot of the problems you have, you know, with American legislation.
Yeah, well, we're just starting that process. In April, I was invited as a stakeholder to a meeting in Brussels of the EU on passenger ship safety. So I literally made a one-day trip to Brussels from Phoenix.
Wow.
Got there on a Monday night, had to leave Sunday night, time difference. I got there Monday night, went to this all-day meeting on Tuesday, and came back Wednesday. But for the first time, the victims were there at the table of this meeting. Now, that was a whole different flavor for them. CLIA was there. The cruise lines were there. And I think they were shocked when I walked into that room. But as a result of going to that meeting, I was able to arrange a private meeting with the EU a few weeks later back in Brussels, plus the International Maritime Organization in London. And 2 weeks later, I went back to Europe. I've been invited to speak to the World Society of Victimologists in The Hague.
Oh, wow.
In May. But before that, we went to London. I had a meeting in Parliament with some of the legislators. And I guess you would say we're planting the seed at this point.
I got to give you credit, Kendall. You're a bulldog on this, man. I mean, I don't blame you with what happened to you, but I'm just amazed at how tenacious you've been about this.
Well,
you know.
I'm not doing it on my own. I think I need to stop at that point. I'm the chairman of International Cruise Victims. A woman named Jamie Barnett is president of International Cruise Victims, and she lost a daughter. And we've got a board made up of people who've been raped, lost parents, and it's a whole group of people.
Yeah.
It's not just myself, and I, you know, it started off with just four of us, but that's dramatically changed.
Yeah, yeah.
So there are a lot of people involved. So on the trip to Europe when we went back in May, Jamie Barnett was there in the presentations. Lori Dishman, who was raped, was there. And, you know, it's just not a small group. And, of course, the Corian family. And to the Corian family, I think being part of ICV, if you're a victim, the last thing you want to do is feel like you're all alone. Well, the Corian family knows they're not all alone.
Yeah.
And that's what we offer victims, that there is a support group that is active. One of the issues we face is resources. We have no paid staff, limited funds, and as we move out around the world, you know, we obviously need resources to carry on this. But so far, we've been given what we've needed to get, and hopefully your show will make more people aware of it. Maybe some of them will be willing to actually help us out. And I might just say we've talked about our website, but our website is www.internationalcruisevictims.org.
Yep, yep, and there's links all over the website for it. So
yeah, well, that's great. So that's where they need to go, and they can see the stories. And daily, we have a woman that posts stories from around the world daily. She's been doing it for 7 years, and she was an attempted rape victim. And she got married a few years ago, and I said to her, I said, gee, maybe we need to get somebody to do this while you're gone. She said, no, I'll find a computer while I'm gone. I mean, that's the kind of dedication of the people that are working with ICV.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. It sounds like they all have really good reasons why they're so passionate about this. They've been wronged by this industry in a major way. Talk about the Amy Lynn Bradley story, because I thought that was pretty interesting. And yeah. Within the context of that story, it's mentioned, you know, that she goes missing on the ship, and they don't even want to make an announcement that she's missing. They don't want to put pictures up that she's missing. They sort of use the facade of not scaring the other passengers to justify not really doing their due diligence as far as trying to find these people, you know, in the now, even. You know what I mean? We're not even talking about, like, weeks and months later trying to get to the bottom of it. It's like you said, the steward reported Marion missing, and they didn't do anything about it. And that's, you know, belied here, or that's supported again here in the Amy Lynn Bradley story.
Yeah, well, the Amy Bradley story is one of the first known victims that really got some press. And the Bradley family believes that she's still alive. That, in fact, they made a port call and she vanished. And they wouldn't keep the ship. They wouldn't, you know, do all the things you just talked about. And that story today, I don't know how many years ago, 10 years ago or more, was probably one of the first stories to really come out of issues of people disappearing on cruise ships. And in her case, you know, they stopped and Amy wasn't there and they wouldn't hold the cruise ship. They wouldn't do anything. And, the family has indicated they think there's sightings of Amy. So was she kidnapped at that port? The issue of people becoming slaves,
right,
is a major issue. And I don't know if I mentioned this so far or not, but over the last 4 years, about every 2 weeks, somebody goes missing off a cruise ship.
Wow.
I mean, you're not talking 2 a year. We're talking... And that is kept by a professor, Ross Klein. And if people go on our website and look under Cruise Junkie, click on it, you keep getting the updates of the people that go missing. And Amy would be, you know, probably one of the first on the list because people weren't keeping track of that stuff. People are now starting to keep track of that. And if somebody goes missing or a crime occurs on a cruise ship, people have access to the internet. That information is getting off that ship.
Right, right.
And going public. And that's the biggest thing that we have in moving our process forward is the press. And the Amy Bradley story, I think last year a major story was done on it. And the hope is that she's out there someplace. My wife wouldn't accept that Marion was gone. For years, and I'm not even sure where she is today, because she just disappeared. There's no answers.
Right, right. That makes it, that's the, like I said, we're dealing with a myriad of sordid crimes here, and these disappearances are particularly vexing, because you never get the answers. It's not just like these mysterious murders that happen, it's also these disappearances that leave the victim families in the dark forever. It's
not a good place to be.
Yeah, yeah.
But let me talk about, you know, we ended up passing legislation. And one of the requirements of the legislation was that if somebody goes overboard on a ship, that a device, if it's available, be installed on that ship to immediately detect the individual going off a ship.
Yeah.
Well, last summer, Coast Guard put out a request for proposals for such a system,
mm-hmm.
on the assumption they wouldn't get any. Guess what? Three companies stepped forward with proposals,
yeah,
for these kinds of systems. Guess what? The Coast Guard has yet to contact those companies.
Not even contact them. That's not, what,
no.
What is, like, this, like, is maddening, Kendall. This is absolutely maddening to hear this stuff. It's just...
They say, well, we have our procedures and et cetera. My goodness, somebody says I got a system to detect these things. You don't wait years to contact them. And there's a side effect of that. We've done Freedom of Information Act requests What the Coast Guard spends when somebody goes missing on a cruise ship.
Yeah.
We have one, it's over $800,000. Another one is over $100,000. So here's two cases. Person went overboard. They never found them. Spent $900,000. And yet somebody comes up with a system that says, hey, we can tell you exactly when it happened and where it was. And I just have to, we're kind of going off course here in line with what you may want to cover, Tim. But in earlier this year, I was in Washington. I was at the Marriott Hotel having breakfast with somebody, with a couple, and I told him what I did. And I said, what do you do? He said, well, I'm with search and rescue with the Coast Guard. I said, well, would it help you to know exactly when somebody went overboard and exactly where it happened? Well, the answer is yes.
Yeah,
it actually saved somebody. And yet they've failed to follow up on these proposals.
They must have some serious financial muscle behind them, these cruise lines. I'm presuming that they've got lobbyists and all kinds of people gumming up the works.
Well, in the 3 years from 2008 to 2010, when our bill was introduced and we were lobbying, according to Dr. Klein, their combined lobbyist fees were $16 million. That's not counting what they're giving to the congressional people directly. So we were up against an organization spending millions, and ICV has no money. I mean, literally no money.
Yeah.
So we are up against those kinds of numbers. But they've done other things. Very smart. I give them credit. On one side, the other side, I'm going to give you the other side of it. They've been very effective in Washington. Every 2 months, they host a meeting with the FBI and Coast Guard. You know, buy them dinner, and they, in theory, talk about terrorist attacks or whatever. It's a secret meeting.
Yeah.
Well, I've said several times, the FBI or Coast Guard should host a meeting, but since they're regulating the cruise line industry, they shouldn't go to a meeting hosted by them.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
it's a conflict of interest.
Yeah.
And that has not fallen on good ears, but I say it, I continue to say it, and they've built strong relationships. They hired the number three guy from the FBI. They hired the chief lobbyist from the FBI. They've hired other agents to go to work for them. They've hired Coast Guard people. The top people at CLIA are Coast Guard people. So not only do they spend the money, but they've manipulated the regulatory system.
Exactly. It's like Big Pharma and some of these other big industries. It's a revolving door of government and CEO type positions.
Well, the security industry and the industry learns how to manipulate the regulators. But at the March hearing this year in the Senate held by Senator Rockefeller, he really took this point on, Tim.
Yeah.
And he said to the cruise line industry, you know, you use the services of 21 government agencies, and you pay nothing in taxes to the government. So you're using the services of 21 agencies, but the cruise line industry, they put their corporations, Carnival's in Panama, Royal Caribbean's in Liberia. They flag their ships in third world countries to avoid all taxes, all work rules. And yet, without the government supporting them through these 21 agencies, they wouldn't be in business.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's just, I'm almost speechless here as we get deeper into this. It's interesting to note that you sort of touched on the idea that maybe Amy Bradley was kidnapped. It does seem like there's a preponderance of young women who are victims here, whether it's these rapes that happen on the ships or these disappearances. And you know, the whole idea of human trafficking is another sort of crime issue and sex, you know, sex slave type stuff that is sort of just now coming into public consciousness as well. So you wonder if these things go hand in hand.
Any single woman that goes on a cruise ship is a target. They're a target to the crew members. And they're at risk. But you know another group that's at risk on a cruise ship? It's the minors.
Yeah.
We did a Freedom of Information Act, got a year's supply of crimes, and where they indicated the age, 18 90% were minors. So people go onto a cruise ship with their families, turn them loose, or put them in the nursery or wherever it is, and you got all kinds of issues going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Sexual issues, pedophiles. But when you think that 18% of the crimes where they noted the age, Dr. Klein figures if the age was shown on all the crime reports, it would be a much higher number than that. And people go on there with a family vacation, turn the kids loose. Well, that's the worst thing they can do.
Right, right. It's chilling in a sense, too, because these cruise lines, you know, they position themselves as like this paradise on the sea and this utopian world, you know, on the ocean, and it really lulls people into a false sense of security in a big way.
Well, not only that, they're promoting unlimited drinks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you try to open up a resort in this country and you say, okay, come to our resort, the door is closed for a week, we're going to offer unlimited drinks, there is no police force, and the workers are from a third world country, they wouldn't let them go in business.
Yeah.
And yet that's exactly the environment of a cruise ship, is that you have foreign workers, unlimited drinks, no police, and people let their guard down. So that if you had a resort here and say, once you go in the door, you're there for a week, and all of these things are going on, well, they wouldn't stand for it. And yet they get on a cruise ship under the same environment, or worse environment, and assume it's safe because the cruise science say it's safe. What limited information has been available shows that the sexual crime rate on a cruise ship is 50% greater than in the average American city.
Say 50%?
50% greater.
Oh, Jesus.
And anywhere from 50 to 70% of the crimes are committed by crew members. Now, Tim, our legislation that we passed was designed to start to address that issue of reported crimes. And this is most significant. In the United States, if you call the local police and say, I've been robbed or whatever complaint that you make at the local police station becomes a public record.
Right.
And that is known. You can get the crimes reported on any location.
Mm-hmm.
It's public information. Well, the Cruise Line Safety and Security Act, the intention was it'd be exactly the same way. So for the first time, you would know how many crimes were on a cruise ship and what kind of crimes and what percent was crew members.
And the difficult part is you got to rely on the cruise industry to provide those numbers, and you know they're going to cook your books.
Well, let's assume they report all those numbers. What we found out last year when the bill was taking effect, in the first quarter of last year, the FBI reported 7 crimes on cruise ships. The second quarter, they reported 6. It's a public on a Coast Guard website. The third quarter, they reported none. So I said, my goodness, now that's not the intention of the bill.
Yeah.
So we did 2 things, Tim. In the past, we've gotten under the Freedom of Information Act alleged crimes that were voluntarily reported for an entire year. It was in excess of 400. The Sun Sentinel, if you go on our website, they did the same thing for 9 months, and they were getting more than 100 every quarter.
Yeah.
So in the first quarter, when I only saw 7 crimes, I said, gee, that's not right. So I asked for the alleged crimes for the first quarter of last year from the FBI under Freedom of Information Act. Same request I'd made, exactly the same in prior years. Guess what? That was in April of 2011. We're now in August of 2012. They've never complied with that Freedom of Information Act request. So what did we find out on the low reporting of crimes? We found out, and this just was determined in June. First of all, we determined somebody had changed the law, intention of the law. So the Arizona Republic, a fellow named Robert Engel, I was concerned about this and a lot of other compliance issues, went to Senator Kerry's office and asked them the question, who changed the law? It was seven words, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
And the response was, the Coast Guard and FBI requested the change. Here's the very organization that's there to protect the public added seven little words that even lawyers didn't pick up on that made the reporting of the crimes, they destroyed the entire reporting requirement. So instead of being like the United States, it's ludicrous. In the last 12 months, the second quarter just came up, this report has showed eight crimes total. And how did they do it? They added a little phrase that said all alleged crimes will be reported on cases that are closed. Well, the FBI, out of the hundreds of cases, has traditionally been only opening 10 to 15% of them and doing an investigation. The rest they just don't do anything with.
Yeah.
So you got 66 crimes that say were open last year, and if they don't close the files, there are no crimes. So it's ludicrous. And if people go to our website site and look at starting about June 10th, you'll see article after article after article from the media outraged at what's going on. And to think that the FBI and Coast Guard, according to Kerry's office, were responsible or requested the change makes it even more bizarre. Now, I strongly suspect there was one beneficiary of the change. That was the cruise line industry.
Of course, yeah.
So it's hard for me to believe they were not involved in that change.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.